More Cap and Haw on Comcast Sportsnet and WGN Plus.
Not exactly sure what Adam did, but a couple steps out of the box, and he started limping on that pop-up in the infield, and very concerned Mike Matheny and Chris Conroy. Pops it up. Everything's fine here. He starts to run and then trips a bit, and then it's almost like
Achilles.
Boy.
Cardinals TV, Danny McLaughlin, Al Hrabowski, and a gang of guys they have on that broadcast. 312-235-2525. Adam Wainwright looks like he's done for the year with a ruptured Achilles tendon. Very sad to see. And, you know, I hear some Cub fans go, wow, what a great break for the Cubs. Look, you want to beat guys at their best. It's understandable.
You do. I think they're balancing the reality that this does affect the Cubs, and this is a year where you could take advantage of that with maybe some people might have unrestrained joy. I don't know that you ever want to celebrate anybody else's injury to that.
Never. Like but that. That's a huge loss. And this is Cap and Haw on Comcast Sports at WGN Plus. A lot of people, Max Scherzer hurt his hand batting. John Lester, you could tell it was a little grimacy the other night. Holly goes, he just hurt his hand. But it was his non-pitching hand. He's fine. Len Casper came out and said this. There's a whole bunch saying it's time for the DH in the National League as well. I asked Joe Maddon that question at spring training. He said, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
He goes,
please. He likes the
He said, the National League
strategy.
Brand of baseball is so much better than the American League. But as Max Scherzer so aptly put it, he said, would you rather watch Big Poppy bat or me?
Well, that's always been true, though, Cap, I think. And also, it should be pointed out that 2011, the Cardinals lost Wainwright, and all they did was win the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't always mean that you're going to, you know, have everybody come back to the pack or you're going to go back to the pack. I think that Max Scherzer is exactly right. I think fans would definitely prefer to see professional hitters than at the plate than pitchers disguised as, you know, hitters with a bat in their mm-hmm. hands.
Right, for every Travis Wood, there's 20 guys that can't hit.
And if this is the impetus to that kind of discussion and that happening and the uniformity of the rules in both leagues, that's what I'm for, okay? I don't know that I feel strongly either way. I think that I like the tradition of having the pitchers bat. I understand why people might be able to want it to change. That's okay. I like what Joe Maddon says about the strategy and how it forces you to manage more than just put your lineup on autopilot. So I'm okay. I don't think it's right to have one league have a DH, especially with as much interleague play as going on.
Okay, and so if I told you could do both, you could you can get rid of the DH and the AL mm-hmm. so they're uniform, or add the DH to the NL. What would you pick?
I would probably, because it's a fans game now, I would think that you'd add the DH.
I agree.
I would be in favor of
and
that.
And I used to be anti DH,
but I'm not against. But here's the thing too, is that this discussion is an important one, and it happens every so often, but I don't know that Adam Wainwright – I mean, look, I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on TV, but he popped his Achilles. Couldn't that have happened running before the game? Couldn't that have happened
no question.
In any capacity athletically? If you're – it's kind of like with how many times are you going to jump off your explode off of your – if you're a basketball player like Derrick Rose – off toward the rim, and your knee's just going to snap.
Right.
You just don't know when it's time. So I don't know that this injury is related to too many at-bats for pitchers in the National League.
That injury scares the daylights out of
me. Everybody, because it's so debilitating.
I go work out, and I'm like, please don't blow an Achilles. Ugh.
But do you know what I mean, Cap? Do you think that this injury was as a result of too many pitchers batting, and he had one too many at-bats?
No, but it happened while he was trying to get out of the box.
It's incidental. It's
right.
incidental.
Right.
He was trying to get out of the box.
Okay, Max Scherzer hurt his thumb.
Well.
That's batting.
Is he missing a start?
He's missing one. I thought he's going to miss his next start.
Okay, you put yourself in harm's way that way. I understand what you're saying. I just don't know that the Adam Wainwright cause and effect.
Right, but if
your Achilles.
If you're Theo Epstein, wouldn't you go, man. I could protect my pitchers, A, and I can get Kyle Schwarber to the big leagues that much quicker, or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
I could go out and spend some of Ricketts' money, and I can go add me a big old bat.
Do you think that in the National League that the pitchers are when you talk about the beanball instance we just kind of dealt with, the fighting and
with the Royals
and the White Sox, do you think it's a different – how much different is it in the National League when pitchers know that they have to go to
play? It's a great question. It's a very good point that you hit somebody and you know, oh, man, I got to go to the plate. Boom.
Are you inviting yourself to more Royals-White Sox shenanigans?
What did people always say about Roger Clemens?
What'd they say about
they
him?
They always said he's willing.
Steroids?
He's yeah, exactly. That he's willing to buzz the tower.
Yeah.
Because he never had any retribution,
right.
And then along came interleague play.
Yes.
And they said, "Oh, Roger's not going to be so quick to throw inside."
It's a deterrent.
And high.
It's a deterrent, and I think that there's a part of the game, and also baseball purists out there. I don't know that you're necessarily qualified as a baseball purist. You respect the tradition. I don't know that you're a purist.
I don't think I'm a purist. I'm more than willing to embrace the changes.
Baseball purists out there have, you know, who love the tradition and history of the game, would they be for something like this? I don't know that they would, because this is definitely changing. Everything changes about your statistics, about your ability to go through a lineup. You know, Jake Arrieta is going 9 up, 9 down with the Reds. How much easier or how much more difficult is that going to be if you're facing?
Yeah, all of a sudden David Ortiz is added to the lineup.
Yeah, that's one out every time, every spin through. It's a little different dynamic, much tougher to pitch in the American League. I think we can accept
no
than
question.
Is in the National League. So there are a lot of things in play here. I do think it's the uniformity, the lack of uniformity is an asterisk for baseball because it doesn't make any sense. You get in the World Series, for instance, and say the White Sox get to the World Series.
Against the Cubs.
Against
the
Cubs.
And they're over at Wrigley,
absolutely.
And they're like, great, so we've got to sit.
Great.
Adam LaRoche or Jose,
yes,
Abreu.
One or the other.
Right.
Or you put Jose Abreu at third base or whatever. The kind
but
of
you're not playing with your normal
the
lineup.
The lineup shenanigans that you have.
And then the Cubs come over to U.S. Cellular and they're like,
All right, Schwarbs, come on up.
Look at Schwarbs or the big bat we went and acquired in July.
Do you know how much more dangerous the Cubs might be down the road?
Or, my goodness.
Or how much more accelerated some of these prospects' paths would. What about Vogelbach? That's an ideal guy.
Danny Vogelbach.
He is a guy tearing up. Double A, is he?
Yeah.
His numbers are sick in your language. And this is a guy that if they had the DH in the National League, you'd look at him as maybe a September 1 guy.
Right. Now you're thinking, well, who can they trade him to?
What position is he going to play?
Not going to play ahead of Rizzo.
No way.
Right.
So I think it changes your entire dynamic. The Players Association would love it. I think most pitchers would probably welcome it. Travis Wood wouldn't like it. He likes to hit.
He does.
He likes to rake.
But he gives
He's
you
– good.
Travis Wood gives you an extra option as a pinch hitter.
And a pinch runner. As he was
did
doing
the other
night.
Day.
Yeah. I don't know, Cap. I mean, so I don't know. To me, it's not as clear cut. I just want uniformity. But I understand why people are resistant to change in the National League, because I do like some of the oddities it creates in the game that needs oddities sometimes to hold your interest. It's fun to watch Joe Maddon manage a National League lineup. It just is.
It is. And he's still learning. He's admitted that.
And would that be different with the DH? He could still be dynamic, creative, and all those things, innovative, but it would be a little bit different. Yes, it definitely would.
Also, speaking of Joe Maddon, I promised you an update.
Yes.
On the tampering. This is from the Tampa Bay Times, and I also read John Heyman, and it says that the soon-to-be-completed investigation into tampering includes checking phone records, computers, and interviewing people that Joe Maddon may have spoken with.
Oh, really? Are they checking Theo's phone records too?
They're checking them all.
How many times is your phone is going to be part of this investigation?
Why?
Because you know your phone's going to pop up on either Theo or Jed's phone records.
Probably.
Around that time. Wow. See how many times Cap called between when they were trying to interview Joe Maddon? Who's this? I want to.
Excuse me, who's this 224 area code that called 107 times over the past 48 hours?
And why are 8 of those calls 16 minutes in length?
That's pretty elaborate, though, isn't it? I mean, look, just move on. The Rays aren't really missing Joe Maddon. I mean, they might miss him at the box office, but it's a long-term thing. They're doing pretty well.
They're Ruby, 11 and thanks.
They have a better record than the Cubs right now.
What's their record?
11-7. You know the Cubs, right? Off the top of your head, don't you?
Half game behind.
You got the magic number calculated. And it's on your breakfast, like your breakfast nook. You got on the bulletin board up there.
It's funny when I wake my wife up in the morning, because I always get up before her. I wake her up about 10 minutes of 5, and I go, 147, baby. She's like, it's 147? No, it's our magic number. 312-235-2525.
Just wrap up that investigation. It's gone on way too long.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you name the player that the Cubs gave up for Theo?
Oh, boy. Now I'm really drawing a blank. No.
Chris Carpenter.
Chris Carpenter.
Not that one.
Yeah, not the Cardinals pitcher. Right.
We had a pitcher named Chris Carpenter. I believe that's who we gave to the Red
then
Sox.
Then he ended up back with the Cubs.
I don't even know then where he's at.
He came back to the Cubs, I believe.
Well, I'll have to look.
Now he's out of baseball.
Is he out of baseball?
I don't know. He might be.
That wouldn't shock me.
Is he in a band?
Would not shock me.
Doesn't he have a band, too? The Carpenters.
Maybe. The Carpenters.
Yeah.
Yeah. 312-235-2525.
And we need to get to the White Sox at some point, because they had a very interesting weekend.
Yeah, we'll do that as soon as we come back. All right. And we'll take some more calls. Anthony Rizzo, 1125. Be right back.
Cap and Haw Show from CSN Chicago and streaming on WGN Plus.
And this is going to be it. And this ball game is over. Xavi Garcia flips it into left center field, and the Sox win it 3-2. Ground ball. Alexei. Yes! And this ball game is over. So the Sox take 2 from Kansas City.
Hell yes! White Sox win. They take 2 yesterday. Finish the rain-shortened game from Friday and then get it done in 9 yesterday, 5 in one inning. The only inning they scored, they beat up Edinson Volquez, who had been dealing up to that point. They got 5. Cap'n Hawk continues at WGN Plus at Comcast Sports.
David Robertson gets the win in Game 1.
And the save in Game 2.
When's the last time that happened?
That would be...
for the White Sox.
I will say the last time that happened was 1999.
Don't tell him!
He didn't
Why
tell
did
me.
He tell you?
Did you say a word?
Oh, okay. I thought he was telling
did
you.
Did not say a word.
You saw it yesterday, and you watched the post game.
I watched the post.
You watched the post game. Bobby Howry.
Yes,
correct. Remember Bobby Howry? He was a good guy.
He was.
For both sides of town.
Did.
Impressive performance by David Robertson. Every time he goes out, you start to think, why in the world did the Yankees let him get away?
Didn't even make an offer.
Unbelievable. This guy's stuff is electric, and it makes you think everyone who worried about him in Arizona, wow. You're wrong. So far, so good. This has been a tremendous signing for the White Sox. And the Sox looked great yesterday. Avi Garcia with the game winner in the suspended game completion, which lasted all about 20 minutes.
Yep. And how about the catch by Melky Cabrera? That Stoney said it might have gotten out. It wouldn't have gotten out. I watched all those different angles.
I don't think it would have.
But it would have hit the wall and would have tied
bases.
The game.
Yes.
Phenomenal catch. And the catch by Alex Gordon diving into the stands, that was the play of the day in all of baseball. And Castro had a great play. Addison Russell, they're not in the same stratosphere. All three Chicago plays, Melky, Castro, Russell. Add them up, they're not as good or as impressive as the Alex Gordon catch.
Phil Rogers, our buddy from MLB.com, longtime former Tripster, was on Twitter machine yesterday, and I think he was ranking the best plays he's ever seen at the cell. And that was I think he had the Dwayne Wise catch first.
Number one.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. He had the Mark Burley flip between the legs. Remember that?
Spectacular.
That was unbelievable athleticism. And then this one. And I think Alex Gordon made it look pretty effortless. I mean, he was pretty athletic. Former infielder.
Yeah.
Who plays the outfield pretty well.
Did you see him
wipe out
that?
He knocked over that fan.
He wiped that fan out. Fan goes flying. And then tweets out a picture of the ball. Like, just as Gordon catches it, somebody got the – I don't know if he took it before he got hit or his buddy took it, but he got it. And so I'm watching TV last night, and it's all over the national news. They're showing his tweet with Gordon in the air as he's making the play. Sick catch.
Great play. And also the Sox found out news of the suspensions over the weekend. And the Royals at Major League Baseball had spoken, and – Jeff Samardzija and Chris Sale will both miss a start as a result.
You gotta be bleeping me.
No, Hawk, they will.
They no bleeping there,
they,
Hawk.
They cannot control their emotions, so they will miss a start.
5 days.
How do you feel
each,
about that?
Five games. I agree with it. Jordano Ventura should have gotten more than seven.
Mm-hmm.
I thought 10 would have been a fair.
Why'd they go
for him.
Seven, you think?
I don't know.
So he'll miss two starts? He'll only miss one start.
They'll just
stagger
time
it.
That he'll miss one.
How are the Sox going to handle that? I mean, they will appeal, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they – why is this –
See, they shouldn't allow the appeals.
Process? I know. Here's what they should do to eliminate the appeals, because isn't the appeal process nonsense?
Stupid.
If you appeal and lose, and they're going to lose.
Doubles.
Yeah. That way people wouldn't appeal.
Right. Okay, you can appeal. You got extenuating circumstances we don't know about, bring them on. But if you lose, you got a 10-gamer.
And who would want the prospects of missing those guys for two starts apiece?
Correct.
You don't want to do that. So you just kind of, okay, let's move on. Because it drags out. It's another layer to the process, and it just is nonsense. Because everybody knows they got what they deserved.
Correct.
You got to watch yourself in those situations.
But again, a great weekend for Chicago baseball. Cubs take two. The other game rained out from the Reds. White Sox take two on Sunday. They were rained out Saturday,
yes.
And Friday they were rain shortened.
Before we get to a call here, baseball question, Cub related.
Mm-hmm.
Addison Russell before the bases clearing double,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, the game, the biggest hit of that game.
Mm-hmm.
And you like to see him go the opposite way. It looked like the guy in spring training. What was your concern level that he was somewhat overmatched?
None.
Because you can't say none.
None.
Then they're just not watching.
I've been watching.
Okay. He was having a hard time making contact. He was not looking like a confident hitter at the plate. He was looking at you.
He's
had
been up a week. He's 21. I had no concern.
To say no concern is way too cavalier, and I don't mean Cleveland's basketball team. You had no concern after watching Addison Russell struggle, and struggle is the right word, up until yesterday's bases clearing double.
None.
You had You had no thoughts that maybe Theo Epstein going against his cardinal rule, and I don't mean St. Louis Cardinals, that you let the guy dominate at each level of play before you call him up. You didn't question that at all.
No.
Even a little bit.
Not a little.
Well, then you're the only one. You're the only one in Chicago that did not have a reasonable let your mind wander thought. Did they bring him up too soon?
No, it's a week. It's too quick.
But did you see he was overmatched at times? He struck out like 10 times, right, in his first
Soler struck out 10 of his last 16 at-bats, I think.
And you still wonder at times about that. I mean, he looks great.
I want to know the splits. I don't know how you do it when he wears that ridiculous face mask or when he bats and doesn't look like he's on the North Pole.
Whose mask do you like better, Jorge Soler's or Scott Darling's?
Very good question. But he goes up there like, shivering up here. Stop! Jeez. You're going to have to deal with this your whole career, man.
Welcome to Chicago.
Get that face thing off.
Can somebody trade me to the Marlins, please?
At least just for a month or two. Come on. Just
so,
stop.
Okay. Then I'll try to ask it a different way since you are doubt-proof when it comes to Cub prospects, or at least you would never admit it. What did Addison Russell change so he was able to overcome what most people would consider a very slow start?
He knew he had certain people in his corner. He talked about that. He said every time he came back to the dugout, Joe Maddon's like, dude, you're relax. You're fine. Not going anywhere. You're my guy.
And he's not over the hump yet.
No, one double off the right field wall doesn't mean
it was a great at bat. It was a great at bat. Had he
started 0-2.
I know. It was a two-strike double. And had he struck out with the bases loaded there, as you like to say, the narrative would have been a lot different today.
Correct.
Could have been a lot different for the weekend for him.
No doubt about it.
Then we might be talking about what's wrong with Addison Russell. Now it's like, I never worried.
Well, it's funny. I check never my worried. Twitter feed and I've got, you know, all these Cub fans that follow me. And I'll get, this guy needs to go back down. He looks terrible. And I will tweet back, R-E-L-A-X, he's 21, stop.
Okay, Aaron Rodgers.
Cub fans embarrass themselves.
312, Hawk is the king of concern. Put that on the board. No, that's the wrong text, sorry. I never had a concern about Russell. He just got called up, LOL. Hawk is the king of concern. It's not like I'm the only person in Chicago that had that same thought. As Addison Russell whiffed and whiffed and whiffed again. I like the kid.
Ryan Sandberg started 1 for 34 or whatever it was.
You just compared him to a Hall of Famer again.
Same with Robin Ventura.
And a perennial All-Star. He does
look. Okie dokie.
You know who else struggled at the start of his career? Big Poppy.
Babe Ruth struggled. Ted Williams, I bet, struggled.
Guys struggle. Let's let him play through.
Jeter. Barry Larkin.
Derek Jeter's first year in professional baseball. What do you have, like 57 errors? Some insane number. Relax.
As a Texan.
Gotcha, thanks.
Okay, all right. Namaste.
You're unbelievable.
Leave the kid alone, idiot. Now, you know, come on, 217. You don't have to call names.
Yeah, no name calling.
Name calling's uncalled for.
Don't need it.
Come on.
312-235-2525. Jerry in Des Plaines wants to get back to a discussion we were having before we talked to Anthony Rizzo. Jerry, what's up there, buddy? How's it going?
Hey, Jerry.
Hi, everything is good. Big fan of you guys. I was watching, I've been watching that show, and I was, like, surprised out of a couple comments, about Jimmy Butler. Why can't we consider Jimmy Butler to be the top three guards in the whole league?
Top three shooting guards, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I mean, Klay Thompson, pretty tough to beat Klay Thompson.
James Harden
might be the MVP. Pretty tough to beat that one. D. Wade's won multiple rings. It's pretty tough to beat that one. DeMar DeRozan's a great player. I have Jimmy top five.
I think you could say top five.
Okay,
you can defend it.
But the thing is, we're not talking about what these guys done in the past 3 or 4 years. We're talking about this season. I don't think Dwayne Wade was a better guard than Jimmy Butler. To me, personally, I don't think Klay Thompson was better than Jimmy Butler because, I mean, if you look at it that way, Klay Thompson had a lot of help, especially from...
No question. Hey, Jerry, we got to roll. We got Anthony Rizzo on hold. All right, buddy?
Thanks, Jerry.
All right.
Thanks. See you, pal. 312-235-2525. Anthony Rizzo's next.
Tribune Tower, Chicago. This is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
I mean, it's going to happen this year. That's what we're going to do. We're gonna play. We're going to win the NL Central, and I'll quote me on that. We're going to do some things this year, and that's what we're expecting, and that's what we're going to put our sights on, and we're not going to accept anything else.
That's Anthony Rizzo when he spoke last winter. This past winter, off to an excellent start, as are the Chicago Cubs, who are playing very good baseball away from home and living by the hashtag, we are good.
We are good. They're very good in the late innings.
I'm getting
Never
tweets,
count them out.
Picture of the 25 and under Cubs.
How about that?
They're having a lot of fun over there, and Anthony joins us now here on Cap'n Haw. He's involved in another great charity event as he gives back to our community. Anthony, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Morning, Anthony.
I'm doing well, guys. How you guys doing?
Thanks for coming on. We're doing very well. Club's playing very good baseball away from home. Take us inside the clubhouse. How much fun are you guys having knowing that management stepped up and got you some pieces this year?
Yeah, we're having a good time. It's a great, great mix of guys. With the veteran leadership we have and the young core group that we have, we've been having a lot of fun, and everyone really enjoys it and gets along with each other. That's the best part about it.
Anthony, what's more fun for you, getting the green light when you're at the plate and it's 3-0, or getting the green light when you're on first base ready to steal second? And what's up with 5 for 5 stolen bases? That's a new addition to your game this year.
Yeah, you know what? I get on base a lot, which is good, and just to get into scoring position or to get on third base and put ourselves in a better position to score. If it helps the team, it helps the team, and luckily I haven't got thrown out yet.
All right, so I just got a tweet that says the hashtag that is sweeping the nation, T-shirts now on sale, and you can buy T-shirts that say, we are good. How did that whole thing start?
You know what? Miguel Montero
his Twitter is kind of it's must see entertainment the way he tweets.
It's
broken English, and I think it was one of our comebacks or one of our walk offs, and he tweets out, "Wow, we are good." Hashtag we are good, and it's great, and that's what we all say, and I hope it sticks.
Anthony, a lot of guys in your situation, when you have one highly touted prospect after another coming and joining the Major League team, whether it's, you know, last year it was Soler, and this year obviously the attention that surrounded Chris Bryant during spring training and his ascension and his promotion. A lot of guys might not have handled it the way that you handled it, and I think that when you look at, you have a lot of respect for the way that you dealt with it and from a maturity standpoint and not feeling threatened at all, but sounding like a guy that you embraced what was happening. And you also were there as a kind of as a mentor to some of these younger players. How much pride do you take in that part of your job?
I mean, getting called up is not an easy process. It's your dreams coming true, and it's what you've worked your whole life for. It's what you've set everything to do, but exerted all your energy for the last however many years. And being young, it's hard to get called up. It's hard to come into a clubhouse of new guys and be accepted right away. And, I've experienced that. And it's kind of just, you know, when guys get called up, it's really my job now. Cause I mean, I'm so fresh of being in the league a few years. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday. So I just try to make them feel as comfortable as I can, because every guy that gets called up is a big part of us winning. And we have no egos in this clubhouse. That's the best part about it. It's how are we going to win today? And then we're going to figure out the next day how we're going to win. And it doesn't matter who does it, how it gets done, as long as at the end of the day we get a W.
The Anthony Rizzo Family Foundation will host its third annual Cook-Off for Cancer, which will feature upscale versions of ballpark food prepared by notable Chicago chefs, served by Chicago Cubs players. Guests will vote for their favorite chefs' dishes by tipping their Cubs server. Tips and event net proceeds will benefit pediatric cancer research, as well as provide support to children and their families battling disease, a cause close to Anthony and his family. Anthony, of course, a cancer survivor. Single tickets to the Cook-Off event are still available and can be purchased at cubs.com/cook. When you came up, and I've gotten to know you pretty well and had a chance to talk with your mom a lot, you from the get-go wanted to give back to the community. The battle that you waged with cancer and the ability you have to impact people, how important is that in your whole life, knowing that, man, you got a busy schedule with baseball and everything, and you still find a way to get involved to this level?
It means a lot. It means a lot to me. It means a lot to my family to give back with our foundation. It's a lot of work with the foundation. I give my parents, my sister-in-law, my agent, the Cubs, ton of credit for everything they take on, because they respond to basically everyone's emails and everyone's requests. They try to respond. But just the platform that we're on as Major League Baseball players, regardless of myself going through cancer, to be able to help out and give back is a lot bigger than things you can do on the field. And it's a great opportunity to really help out among the community and help out kids going through cancer.
Anthony, when you look at what you guys have done so far this year and the promise that you've provided Cubs fans with how you have won the games that you won, a lot of them have been come from behind. How much of a link do you think it is between the way that you guys have won some of these games and the atmosphere, the culture maybe that's created by Joe Maddon?
I think us winning games like this is huge for us. I mean, we want to win every game by 10 runs and win easy, but it's the close games that really, you know, build character on your team, and that's what we're doing right now. We're building our character and our identity, and Joe really is great along the way. He just wants us to be ourselves, and that's all we could ask for, is just to come in every day, be yourself, and play the game hard.
We've got a bunch of tweets. Please ask Anthony what was going on with the helmet rubbing we saw in the Red Series. Can you shed any light on that?
Yeah, you know what? It's Johnny Herrera, I think, started it. I got to get the whole story on this, because I just caught on to it yesterday of all the guys rubbing their helmet. But I don't know. I like it. I like what's going on. And obviously, we took both games in Cincinnati, so we got to keep it going.
And is the disco ball retired, or does that go on road trips as well?
It did not make this road trip, and I know Joe and Davey Martinez weren't too happy about that, so it'll be coming on the next road trip.
We're talking to Anthony Rizzo of the Chicago Cubs. Cubs be playing again tonight. Holly and I will have the post-game show from Wrigley after tonight's game. You know, I want to break down the splits of guys wearing the face mask because it's so cold, like Soler, and when they don't wear the mask. It's like you wear the mask, not you, but like Soler looks like he's so cold, he just, strike me out, I just want to get back where it's warmer. Do you talk to the guys, especially guys from warm weather places like you, on how to handle playing in cold here at Wrigley at the start of the year?
You just do it. You know, it's tough because we're so used to, especially coming from Arizona, where it's warm all the time. But you just do it. I mean, the other day, Soler had at bat versus Pittsburgh with a guy throwing 100 miles an hour, and it was literally snowing on him. And, I'm on deck. I'm going to be on deck circle. I'm like, this just isn't fair. But it's something both teams have to deal with, and I think all the guys are doing a pretty good job. Especially here in Chicago, what we were expecting is not as bad as what we thought.
You know, Anthony, I think that whether it's because he's got people behind him, maybe he feels pressure or other guys that can play the position or whatever it is, maybe it's just maturity. But Starlin Castro defensively has been as outstanding in this early season as I can remember him playing as a Cub, and I just wondered, what do you attribute it to, and do you have the same opinion? Is he as good as you've ever seen him?
Yeah, I mean, I think Castro's really good. I think he's always really good. I think sometimes, you know, some lackadaisical plays, but to start this year, you know, he made a couple errors real early, but he just got past them, and he's a lot more aggressive now. And I think it's just the whole attitude of the team, really. It's and Castro is just chipping in on all levels, and that's what we ask for out of all the guys. Just do your part, and we are good. Hashtag we are good.
Absolutely. Hey, as we let you go, Addison Russell, big hit off the wall yesterday, breaks open a close game. He had been scuffling, not defensively, but offensively, and he said the most important thing was everybody in the dugout said, dude, just relax. You're not going anywhere. Just settle down and play, and Joe's been very supportive. How tough is it when you rewind your brain to you first coming up? Oh, man, you just want to get a few hits.
Of course. It's like I said, it's not easy to get called up. The good thing with Addy is that he was in spring training for a long, long he was one of the last cuts. So he knows a lot of the guys. We're all very familiar with him, and we all accept him. And to know that he doesn't have to be the guy every day, you know, he just come in, do your work, get better, and help us win. And, I mean, the other day, that diving play he made to his backhand was unbelievable. And then the hit, I mean, it's huge. It's huge for us, the two-out knock. So, those are good things, and just going to keep getting his confidence up. That's all it's about.
So do you have to establish a stolen base goal now along with the home run goal and RBI total?
Yeah, no doubt. You know, you got to get, what is it, 30?
Yeah, 30. 30-30.
Who knows?
The unbelievable.
That'd be something else.
All right, again, the Anthony Rizzo Family Foundation hosts its third annual Cook-Off for Cancer, featuring upscale versions of ballpark food prepared by notable Chicago chefs served by Cubs players. It all supports pediatric cancer research as well as providing support to children and their families battling the disease. Single tickets to the Cook-Off event still available can be purchased at cubs.com/cook. Here's hoping that Holly and I got to get you on the post game tonight because you had two steals, a home run, and another victory.
All right, Cap. Sounds good.
Thanks, see you Anthony. At the park tonight.
See you later.
Take care. There he is, Anthony Rizzo of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, the whole stolen base thing is a new element, but more power to him.
Yeah.
They didn't even keep an eye on him yesterday, and he just took off. Good timing.
He's not Billy Hamilton, but he can run.
Yeah, he can run for a big guy. He's got respectable speed.
Hit the big two-run home run the other day. So, yeah, off to a very good start. Cubs off to their best start since 2008. They're 10-7. They were 11-6 under Lou Piniella.
They're having fun.
Went on to win 97 games and get to the playoffs.
That's obvious.
All right, 312-235-2525. Little page two action.
Sure.
That good?
Yeah.
That work for you, Mikey? All right, we'll do that. 312-235-2525. Cap and Haw.
Desperate for stories, and this one is so compelling.
This is Page Two.
All right, Page Two, Kevin Hall, home stretch, wrapping up another fun show.
Yeah,
on Comcast Sports at WGN Plus.
Page Two gets to stuff we haven't gotten to in the first part of the show. Actually, I want to start with something that was on Page One of this sports section of the Chicago Tribune this morning.
Yeah, that cool picture of Phil Handler, George House Jr., and Abe Gibran.
And Dan Wiederer did a tremendous job of looking back at the last time the draft was in Chicago, 1964, and writing a fun story about just how much has changed. And one of the elements in there was kind of a, can you believe this? The draft was held up 5 hours because the Cowboys got to the point where they wanted to draft Mel Renfro.
Correct.
But they heard he had a hand injury. So they summoned a doctor from Portland, requested he drive to Oregon campus in Eugene to fully examine Renfro. It held up the draft for 5 hours, according to Gil Brandt. Imagine that. The draft was held up 5 hours because they wanted to have a medical on Mel Renfro. And the draft, as the Tribune chronicled, the first three rounds in 1964, when last time it was in Chicago, took 14 hours and 46 minutes.
Right, and there was a part in the article, which was very well done by Dan Wiederer, where they said that you would get woken up. I'm trying to remember who was the quote from. They would wake you up and go, hey, man, it's your turn to pick. Who do you want? And you wouldn't even know who'd been picked before you.
Right, and basically, there were probably six newspaper reporters that covered the draft, including the Tribune's legendary Cooper Rallo. And this year, 1,300 media credentials.
Crazy.
1,300 media credentials are being issued. And you know, we take a left when you walk out of Tribune Tower here and you go down Michigan Avenue, and not long before you see Draft Town. Chi-Town goes Draft Town.
Crazy.
And it's overtaken the week. You're going to see a lot of ESPN types around. They're in town because of the telecast, NFL Network types, a lot of agents, a lot of executives.
All here.
A lot of prospects. Yeah, but I enjoyed that story from Dan Wiederer, who did a nice job of telling about the draft. The last time it was here, 51 years ago.
Crazy. All right, get this. Teddy Bridgewater at his pro day last year.
Yeah.
They did a drill.
It was an awful day.
And he choked.
Day. Yeah.
They said he choked. Something that may have caused him to slip to the 32nd overall pick in last year's draft. The exact drill where Bridgewater struggled was when he had to throw a pass over raised brooms, which were supposed to simulate an oncoming pass rush. Norv Turner addressed recently in a piece by ESPN the magazine, someone should take those brooms and shove them up someone's backside.
Well, Teddy Bridgewater did the equivalent of that with quite a promising rookie season.
Correct.
He said basically, in essence, pro days don't matter. Draft me anyway. And he came through. He redeemed himself quite well. I remember, though, because he was thought to be, by many people, maybe the best quarterback, most talented quarterback coming out on some boards.
Correct.
And then he dropped because he had a terrible pro day. You gotta be careful.
Staying on the quarterback side before we move back to you, a former NFL executive told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Bob McGinn, with Jameis Winston, I see Jamarcus Russell. Isn't it interesting? I see the body. I see the lack of focus. I see the same coach and system. Only Winston's not as good an athlete, and his arm isn't as strong as Jamarcus's. We're looking at another guy that's a product of the system and has tremendous athletes around him. But former Bucks GM Mark Domenech, now working as an analyst for ESPN, thinks such reports are ridiculous. I think it's rude. I think it's completely off base to call him Jamarcus Russell. I just don't see the comparison. Look, if you want to say one thing about Jameis as a football player, the only thing I'd sit there and say is at the end of the season, he lost 17 pounds to go to the combine. I didn't like that, you know, because I'd like to think he's playing as well as he can all the way through the bowl series and then getting himself ready for the combine instead of having to get himself in shape.
I saw Mark Domenech very upset about the characterization comparison to Jamarcus Russell. I think it's an apt comparison. I don't know what's so insulting about it. You've got a number one overall pick. Who has a tendency to balloon in weight, who's got some questionable off the field judgment issues, right? And Jamarcus Russell was the definition of bust, and Jameis Winston is a potential bust.
Mark Dominic finishing that point from a football standpoint, from a football intelligence, from a competitor, from a leader, it ain't close. It's embarrassing. From my personal opinion, whatever GM said that, probably should not be a GM,
okay,
quite frankly.
Maybe so. Maybe so. To me, it doesn't seem like it's that big of a leap to make a comparison to a guy who's going to be drafted number one amid many questions about his character, about his ability, about his how his ability will translate in the NFL system, and a guy who was a number one overall pick who failed. No, I don't find that insulting at all. I think that's natural. Stick with football real quick. This was at the Associated Press Sports Editors Convention or meeting last week in New York. NFL General Counsel Jeff Pasch was talking about domestic violence and penalties and discipline. And it came out that, just to be clear, Ray McDonald, remember him? Bears signed him.
Mm-hmm.
Sat in George McCaskey's office, said, George, I love you. I want to be a Bear. Call my parents. They'll tell you how much I want to be a Bear. And so George called his parents and everything was fine. So Ray McDonald actually has two issues, he says, as you may remember. One, domestic violence incident, which he will not be disciplined for.
He was cleared.
Yes. And one related to an alleged sexual assault. It's the domestic violence incident we have finished investigating, according to Pasch, and did not find sufficient evidence. The sexual assault incident, that investigation, according to Pasch?
Ongoing.
Yes. So it's not been completed, and I suppose the NFL could act. It doesn't seem like if there weren't any charges, they would, but it was interesting to hear him clarify the fact that, whoa, 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 he's not been cleared of both things, only one. And still have one to look at and to decide before they clear that up. So I think Ray McDonald, still a little bit of suspense over whether or not he will be totally cleared, but it looks that way.
He also says that he has videotape proving his innocence in the sexual assault.
Yeah, I would hope that never gets leaked.
Speaking of videotapes that got leaked, did you see the Warren Sapp videos from the police department?
No.
Oh, my goodness, when he breaks down and starts crying because he's going to jail. Wow. Crazy stuff. They're on TMZ.
Are they?
Oh.
And he realizes just what is ahead of him?
Yeah, this female police officer is did you see him, Mikey? They're interviewing him. She's interviewing Warren Sapp. What happened? I took my phone and I videoed the one girl doing something to me. The other girl didn't want to participate, but I'd already paid both of them. And then he ran out naked in the hall after them and blah, blah, blah. And she said, okay, well, this is not just something we can give you a citation where you're going to jail. And she gets up and leaves. Another police officer was in there. He leaves. And then he's sitting in the chair by himself in this little room. And he's big gut hanging out. He pulls his shirt up over his face. No, I can't. This can't be happening.
Imagine those aren't the kind of tears that he shed when he found out he was being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Correct.
Different kind of tears.
Correct.
All right.
Hey, a pair of Nikes that were the earliest NBA worn shoes of Michael Jordan's that I actually held in my hand on the most recent edition of A Piece of the Game. They brought the shoes over. They were sold this weekend. $71,553. Dollar, wow. Second highest price paid for game-worn Jordan shoes. In 2013, the shoes Jordan wore during the flu game in the 97 NBA Finals sold for $104,765. Mike says, who the hell buys this stuff? It's a huge market for
who
it.
Who does buy this stuff?
Huge.
70 market. Grand for a pair of old shoes,
mm-hmm,
that Michael Jordan once wore.
Correct.
Wore once or once wore? Did he wear them only once?
I believe he wore them one time.
Interesting. So those aren't ones you're kind of putting on, lacing up, and going to play at the Y. You're just putting those on a shelf somewhere.
Correct.
Or reselling them.
Correct.
What would you do?
I would never have bought them, but if I owned them, I'd have sold them in a second.
But you're around them, the memorabilia people. You know that there's a market for this stuff. Does, mm-hmm, this price surprise you?
No, not at all.
That's up there.
It's a lot of cash.
It surprises me. It doesn't surprise you?
No.
But then you saw Addison Russell's double coming too, so.
You wouldn't believe the stuff that gets sold for way more than this.
All right, did you see this yesterday? I thought this was funny. Or maybe it was on Saturday. No, it was yesterday. Rick Carlisle, Mavs coach.
Yeah.
Who coming off a $25,000 fine for criticizing officiating post game. He was asked about, I don't know if it's post game, he was asked about the officiating post game, and he put a piece of duct tape over his mouth when he answered a question. Did you see the video?
I did not see it, but I read about it. Yeah.
It looks like a hostage. Who does that?
It was very funny.
I imagine Mark Cuban might get a kick out of that because he's been fined and whatever. I think that's quite an odd look for an NBA head coach to have voluntarily. But Rick Carlisle, yucking it up in his postgame.
Senators coach Dave Cameron upset his club was eliminated yesterday and won nothing. But he's more upset there won't be a do-or-die Game 7 in Montreal. My biggest disappointment in not going back to Montreal with the team, missing that heated toilet seat at the Ritz-Carlton.
Oh, we could have done without that one.
They made heated toilet seats.
That we could have definitely done without that one.
Pretty funny.
That is a good one.
Pretty funny.
All right, let's wrap it up here with a little bit of hockey. Breaking news. It's not breaking news. It's an update from practice today.
Mm-hmm.
Hawks have put Chris Versteeg in a white jersey.
Pretty funny.
Which is the dreaded practice. You know, you're not dressed. It's a healthy scratch team. Joakim Nordstrom in a white jersey. Teuvo Teravainen dressed in black. He's back in black. So I know that there are still several days, we don't know how many yet, before the first game. So there's a lot of practice time left. But this is an encouraging sign. You play the Wild, you play instead of the Blues. If you play the Blues, you might be going for a little more physicality. Maybe you don't want to go to Teuvo. But if this is a skill series, a time when you want to kind of emphasize your superiority that way, bring up the kid, let him play, let him skate.
No question.
He had an excellent game one. He was only ordinary in game two, to use Q-speak. And then he never saw the ice again.
But had it been the Blues and not the Wild, I wonder how the whole lineup would have been different.
We'll find out. I mean, this is not permanent either. I still don't know if Joel Quenneville has it in him to make Chris Versteeg a healthy scratch for a playoff game. That's his guy. He always goes to Versteeg, sticks with them. And, hey, your guy Richie, who you doubted so much, had a pretty good series. Brad Richards, pretty good series against the Preds.
Finished strong. And that play to get Kaner the goal. That was Brad Richards saying to Keith, slide over here.
Very good on the dot as well. So was Vermette.
Yep. He stepped up. Did a good job.
Maybe Teuvo is back.
We'll see.
In the rotation.
Hopefully.
And hopefully tomorrow we'll know when the Hawks are going to be playing.
312-235-2525. Put it on your speed dial. We'll be back here for you at 9 a.m. tomorrow.
Talking about the Bulls
really
game.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully they're moving on to play Cleveland. Sports Talk Live today, 5 o'clock. David Haw, Teddy Greenstein, Rick Tellender, and me from the United Center. And then I'll have Cubs with Holly from Wrigley after that. Have a great day. See ya.
See ya.
All right. Well, see you later.